You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me as always for our Monday episode, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Rob, if there's a week that deserves to be called a national holiday, it has officially arrived. Training camp is finally returning. The Seahawks set to kick things off on Wednesday. Players are going to report tomorrow. The stakes have been raised given what happened last year, the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm just fired up in case you can't tell.
Yeah, I'm fired up as well, Corbin. You know, in my line of work with the NFL draft business, you know, when it gets to the NFL draft, that week is something that some of us like to call Draftmas. So that's very much a sports holiday for some of us as well. But yes, the week that NFL training camps open, I think is an even bigger deal. And I think that when you are a fan of the Seattle Seahawks in particular, given all of the off-field and off-season kind of questions that kind of hounded this team, and then just how talented this club is, then yeah, I think that this is very much a holiday-like week for football players or football fans, especially those who are Seahawks fans.
Speaking from our perspective, from fans' perspective, even from players' perspective, you're really happy to see the dark days of the offseason go bye-bye and actually have real football to talk about. And so we're going to finally have that back starting Wednesday again. I could not be more excited. Glad to have you listening in. As always, jam-packed episode coming your way. We're going to talk the receiver position, continuing our training camp preview, and of course, tackle your questions in our Monday mailbag. NBA Draft GOAT Chad Ford, Locked On NBA Draft host Rafael Barlow, and Locked On NBA host John Carolus will be live this year covering the NBA Draft. It's Locked On NBA Draft 2021, brought to you by Built Bar. Get local expert analysis on each pick. Follow Locked On NBA on YouTube today and watch our live coverage on July 29th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. It's been one of the big storylines. Obviously, it did not involve number three. That was the biggest offseason storyline for the Seahawks. But coming in a very close second place, everybody's been wondering, when are the Seahawks going to extend Jamal Adams? And if they don't before training camp, is he going to show up? Well, Rob, we at least have a little clarity now on the second part of that question. No agreement has been reached yet, according to Ian Rappaport of NFL Network. In fact, he said that the Seahawks and Adams are not close on an extension, but he added that Adams is expected to report on time for the start of Seahawks training camp. I would anticipate he is not going to be participating in drills until he has a new contract, but this is just my opinion, but I think this is a good thing that he is coming out for the start of training camp and he's going to be there. That shows some good faith between him and the organization that this is going to get done. I think if he felt the other way, he'd probably be holding out.
Yeah, no question about it. I think the fact that Jamal Adams is expected to be in Seattle on Tuesday before the start of training camp officially on Wednesday, if he is indeed in Seattle and at the Seahawks training camp at the VMAC, Corbin, yes, I think that would be awesome news from a Seahawks perspective because we have talked about it a lot that he is in the final year of his deal. He knows that he has some leverage. He and his representatives, of course, know that they have some leverage against the Seahawks in this contract negotiation. And so if Adams is in fact present, then that is that good faith sign from he and his representatives. I think it's also a good sign for the Seahawks just to be able to kind of create their, to start their training camp, on kind of a positive note. We're kind of remiss in just saying as exciting as training camp's opening is this year. It is, of course, unique because, of course, there wasn't a training camp for fans a year ago. If Jamal Adams is at training camp, even if he's not participating, if Seattle is able to actively continue to negotiate and hopefully come to some type of agreement to bring Jamal Adams back and extend that contract, I think everybody knows that he is looking to be the highest paid safety in the NFL, the highest paid safety of all time. The Seahawks have all but acknowledged that they're willing to give him that. I do think that this is a positive sign that the Seahawks and Jamal Adams are going to be able to come to some type of agreement relatively quickly. And if he is not actively practicing at the beginning of training camp, then he certainly should be within a few days.
When you're looking at topics like a player potentially holding out, wanting a massive contract like Jamal Adams, you've got to be able to plow through the smoke screens. And obviously there have been a bunch of them. There's been a lot of different reports about how negotiations are going to this point. A couple weeks ago, there was a report that the Seahawks were not wanting to pay him more than Bobby Wagner, who's making around $18 million per year. They wanted to keep Bobby Wagner as their highest paid defender. There have been other reports out there earlier in the offseason that he wanted pass rusher money, $19-20+ million. So there's been all kinds of different reports out there. But I did think it was interesting. If you actually clicked the link that NFL.com posted with Rappaport's comments, he made it clear, yes, right now they're not close in negotiations, but he expects eventually there is going to be a deal between the two sides. And that matches with what I've been told by sources all along. The last couple months when I've been talking to people, both sides are motivated to make this happen. This is not an instance where Jamal Adams is kind of unsure whether he wants to be a Seahawk and the Seahawks are unsure they want to have him. I mean, they traded two first-round picks for him. The Seahawks absolutely know they need to re-sign him, and Adams has leverage because of that. We can question Seattle's decision not to give him a new contract as part of the trade last July 26th. We're officially on the one-year anniversary of that deal, by the way. But we can question it all we want. At the end of the day, the Seahawks got to get the job done here. Both sides got to reach an agreement, and I am sure that Fred Warner's recent extension with the 49ers has probably made things a little bit more difficult for the Seahawks trying to negotiate this deal from a financial standpoint. But you got to believe with the optimism that's still out there from both sides, they are going to hammer this out. They're going to get it done. Whether that means the Seahawks are going to fork over a little more money or Jamal Adams ultimately decides it's not worth it for me to bicker over $500,000 per year. Let's sign on. Somebody's going to give in just a little bit and they're going to reach an agreement. And I still think it's going to be fairly soon.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that the Seahawks fans are always going to be a little bit concerned when they think about the negotiations between, you know, some of their favorite Seahawks and what has gone on recently. You mentioned the Fred Warner deal. I think there's going to be some Seahawks fans out there who are going to think back to where Seattle basically felt like they were forced to trade Frank Clark based on the deal that the Dallas Cowboys gave to Marcus Lawrence. I think that's where John Schneider and one of his principal negotiators, Matt Thomas, that they just have to kind of stick to their guns a little bit, so to speak. And if they are going to have to make sure that Jamal Adams knows that he is likely to get that contract that is, again, going to make him the highest paid safety in league history. Right now, the highest paid safety is Justin Simmons with the Denver Broncos, is a relatively young player, a Pro Bowler. So he deserves the fact that he is making roughly $15.2 million. So roughly $1 million per game. If Jamal Adams is expecting to completely obliterate that number, if we're talking 18, 19 million, jumping ahead of Bobby Wagner, then I think that might be too much to ask. And that there is a possibility that this could get into a little bit uglier negotiation. But again, the fact that Jamal Adams is expected to be in camp, I think this does sound like this is a situation where things should move relatively quickly and everybody should be pretty happy. And Jamal Adams back on the field for the Seahawks as soon as possible.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and guarantee that this does not drag out, because we know these contract negotiations can be fluid and something could be said by the team or by the player that could end up derailing things. I don't expect that to happen, though. I don't think it's time for Seahawks fans to panic. I anticipate that there's going to be a deal here sooner rather than later. It all just comes down to the bottom line, as it always does. I expect both sides to be able to reach an agreement here in the near future. It's going to be interesting to see how the next several days play out on that front, but fans can expect to see number 33 out there in uniform. I just wouldn't expect that there's not a new contract that he's actually going to be participating, but he's at least going to be there, similar to what Bobby Wagner did a few years ago before he got his new contract extension during the early stages of training camp. When we come back in the second quarter, we're going to tackle your questions on our weekly Monday mailbag. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs enter in the Built Bar, 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of the best ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, double chocolate. You're going to have a tough time eating just one. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. It's great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for a keto diet. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition, here on Training Camp Week. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang, as we will do each and every Monday throughout the course of the 2021 season. It's time to tackle your questions on our Locked On Seahawks Monday mailbag. First one coming here from Michael Hendrickson tweets, do you think Dwayne Brown's contract extension will get done before the start of training camp? What's the word on that negotiation? I don't know on your front whether you've heard anything on this, Rob, but everything has been really quiet on my end when it comes to Dwayne Brown. And maybe that's good news. Maybe that means we might get an update tomorrow. The Seahawks have agreed to terms with Brown on a new deal. But at this point, I would be skeptical that they're going to get something done before they actually start on Wednesday.
Yeah, I'd be surprised. I just think that Jamal Adams is the higher priority right now. And so I would expect that to be the first deal that gets done. But, you know, when you're talking about with Dwayne Brown, he is represented by, at least the last I had heard from, by Kennard McGuire, who has been an agent for a long, long time in this business. If I remember correctly, he was an agent for some of past Seahawks like Ken Hamlin and Brandon Mebane. I mean, Kennard McGuire has been in this game for a long time. And so because you have a veteran agent, because you have veteran negotiators on Seattle's side, of course, and again, in Schneider and the aforementioned Matt Thomas, then I think that this is something that gets done and that I don't think there's anything really to worry about. Do I expect it to happen before training camp officially begins on Wednesday? No, probably not. But I think Dwayne Brown, like Jamal Adams, is going to be a Seahawk in 2021 and 2022 in the future after that as well.
I'm expecting that there's going to be another deal that's going to come to fruition here. Adams is going to be the number one, but it's either going to be Brown or Quandre Diggs in quick order is going to get a new contract. And maybe both of them. We could see all three of those players get extensions, but they're not all going to happen overnight. They're not all going to drop the first day or two of training camp. That's just simply not going to happen. I could see all three of them getting contracts here in late July into August as the Seahawks try to work through those things because they're all very important players. But I would predict Brown's probably got the better chance of being the number two guy just because of the position he plays. But the fact he's going to be 36 next month, that might make things a little bit trickier for the Seahawks in the negotiation front and trying to extend a player who's still playing well, but he's an aging player, and we know players at that age at any point can hit a brick wall. Dwayne Brown doesn't look to be heading that direction, but you never know. That's going to make things a little more interesting between those two sides. Second question from Marshall tweets, how significant would Chandler Jones leaving the NFC West be for Seattle? You might not have heard about this, Rob, because this just dropped in the last 24 hours, but apparently Chandler Jones wants out of Arizona because he's not happy with his contract. I know one player that would be very happy if he ends up leaving the division, Russell Wilson.
Well, Russell Wilson and the aforementioned Dwayne Brown, I think his job would be a little bit easier as well, Corbin. Yeah, if the Arizona Cardinals lose one of the NFL's absolute best pass rushers in Chandler Jones for any length of time, then yeah, I think that absolutely could potentially derail their entire season. And at the absolute minimum, be a distraction as we enter training camp. And I appreciate you kind of, you know, give me a heads up on the Chandler Jones situation. I have been kind of paying attention to that. It's interesting to me. And I think that it ties in interestingly enough with the Seahawks as well. We were just talking about with Jamal Adams and Dwayne Brown. At least what I've read so far, Corbin, is that Chandler Jones is at least part of the reason why he's upset with the Cardinals is because, you know, they made the big deal for DeAndre Hopkins and he got a new deal. And you know, you look at the offensive mentality of the Arizona Cardinals, and that team is built all around Nuke Hopkins and, of course, Kyler Murray, et cetera, et cetera. They're going to take care of their offensive guys, but they just let go Patrick Peterson. they, you know, who's to say that they're going to, you know, bring back Chandler Jones in a big time deal, big time deal. So I understand why he's a little upset. And I think that this is just about the fact that he's not going to be the head guy in Arizona. And that's how egos sometimes can get into this mix, and why it is important that Seattle is going to have to be very diligent with how they deal with Dwayne Brown, Jamal Adams, et cetera, in these contract negotiations. But again, to answer the question quickly, if Chandler Jones is not a part of the Arizona Cardinals, then their pass rush evaporates and their secondary has a lot of talent, but it's pretty untested. And so I think that Arizona Cardinals team could go from being a possible Super Bowl contender to possibly not even being a playoff contender.
Yeah, I think it's that big of a loss if they have to trade him. If he forces his way out and there's not a resolution there contract-wise, I still think there's a chance that that could happen. The Cardinals could be like, okay, we know you're upset. Let's get you a new contract. Let's make things better. But this is a player that has just absolutely terrorized the Seahawks over the years. Russell Wilson, he and Aaron Donald, those are the two guys that he probably has regular nightmares about, because he has to play him twice a year. Getting him out of the division would make Russell Wilson a very happy camper, and it really would impact Arizona's chances of being able to contend in this gauntlet of a division. He is a big-time superstar. I know he missed most of last year injured, but he's fully healthy. They cannot afford to let him go. If that happens, that's a big loss that could make things very tricky for them in this division. Francisco tweets, who do you think, or why do you think, a lot of people are hesitant to recognize DK Metcalf as a top 10 receiver?
Cataracts, bad cable connection. I don't know. And then anybody who watches DK Metcalf play football, Corbin, I think that they have to see a guy who is just an absolute budding superstar. Now, Seattle has had some stars, but not like I'm talking about Ken Griffey Jr. kind of type. I mean, it just takes over the entire game, you know. And so that to me is what I think DK Metcalf could be. He has not yet done that yet, you know. And there's so many other good receivers in the NFL. I think you have to acknowledge some of those other great receivers out there. But yeah, I think that that Francisco needn't worry that DK Metcalf is going to be getting plenty of attention because I expect that his success is just starting.
I'm glad you mentioned cataracts, because I was just literally going to say I think a lot of people are blind that are in the NFL evaluation business. And I understand that there is a lot of receiver talent in the NFL. There's never been more receiving talent than there is in today's NFL. It just seems like every year these draft classes that are coming out, the pro-ready talent at the position, you have all kinds of different players. You've got incredible route runners. You've got speed burners. You've got big receivers that can body up corners and they can win jump balls. And then there's DK Metcalf, who I just feel like was genetically engineered in a lab to be able to just light the NFL on fire. I mean, I just look at the skill set, that freakish 4.33 speed at his size, just the build. I mean, he looks like he was carved out of stone, and yet he's one of the fastest dudes in the league. We saw what he did in that track race earlier this spring, and I know that he finished the end of his heat, but that was an incredible time, and he went toe-to-toe with professional sprinters, and so he's just an absolute freak. Name 10 players at that position that are better than him, and I'll show you somebody that just hasn't watched enough football. Now, top five, you can make some really good arguments. He's probably not there yet, but top 10, with what he did last season and just what a matchup nightmare he is, and just listen to corners that have had to defend him talk about him. That right there should be enough to tell you he is viewed by the players that matter most in this evaluation, the corners themselves. He is viewed as a clear top 10 talent in this league. B2 tweets, who do you think will be the X factor for the Seahawks defense this year? So maybe just one player that nobody's talking about that's going to be the biggest X factor for this defense continuing to play well after ending last season on a strong note.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, to me, there's two X factors that immediately jump to mind: Marquise Blair and Darrell Taylor. You know, we talked about both of them so much, Corbin, but I think that those two players could have absolutely zero impact for the Seahawks, and they could have a massive impact for the Seahawks. And so to me, that is the very definition of X factor.
I've got to go to the secondary, because the biggest question mark is still the cornerback position. It's got to be Akella Witherspoon. because as I've mentioned a few times this offseason, you go back and you watch the tape. There are games earlier in his career, even at times last season, where you watch and you're like, I don't know how this guy's an NFL corner. He looks lost out there. He's not playing with confidence. Then you watch the last four games of last season and you're thinking, this kid, if I had not watched any film prior, I would think that's a Pro Bowl caliber corner. And he's got such great size and athleticism and ball skills. He's got all the physical and all the physical tools, all the football skills in the world to be an outstanding outside corner in the NFL. He just has not been able to put things together, and he's had some injuries that have also hindered his development. So if they can have him, if he can take the big step forward that he never could take in San Francisco, and he really figures it out in Seattle, again, I think this kid's got Pro Bowl talent. The Seahawks could find themselves a long-term option at corner who's on a prove-it deal right now. Next question here from Jameson tweets, do you still see any way Richard Sherman comes back to the Hawks? It feels to me like an even better redemption story after what happened 2 weeks ago. I guess that's one way that you can look at it.
Yeah, Jameson, while I would agree with you, it would be that much better of a redemption story. I think it's that much unlikelier that there's going to be a reunion between the Seahawks and Richard Sherman. I think at least until the entire situation gets resolved, until that happens, I don't expect Richard Sherman to be with any NFL teams. But I do like his skill set, as we talked about so many times with the Seahawks, and we know, and I think you make an excellent point just a moment ago with Kelly Witherspoon, the secondary is obviously a huge area of concern.
Yeah, I think the odds of this happening were already getting to be pretty slim before Sherman got in trouble with the law, obviously trying to break into his in-laws' home. And he also was driving under the influence, a number of misdemeanor charges that are going to be levied against him. His sentencing is coming up in August. So this is something that is not going away yet. They're still going to have to deal with the repercussions from that. Luckily, no felony charges being placed against him ultimately, so he's avoided that, but there's still going to be some consequences to his actions from the night that he's remorseful for. I hope that he ends up making it back into the league. It'd be nice to see him come back to the Seahawks, and maybe that's what happens here is middle of the season, once he's got his life back together. If Seattle's having some issues at corner, they've had some injuries, maybe a combination of both, they could absolutely bring him back in the middle of the season as a veteran. That's a guy you can get ready quick and he can play for you that week. But I just don't think football is a priority right now. The Seahawks already seem like they were lukewarm on bringing him back with the players they already have at corner. So I just don't see it happening right now. Maybe down the road that changes, but in early stages of training camp, especially given his off-field circumstances, I think it's close to 0% chance that this happens. Last question real quick coming from Brent tweets, what do you believe is the most important aspect of a third down running back? How does that impact Seattle's decision there? I think this is a really good question that might not have an answer specifically, because it really depends on the team that you're talking about.
It does. And I think that, you know, again, you're talking to a draft guy. I'm always going to, you know, kind of break down some specific traits that I look for. You know, for me, there's three main things. I'm looking for soft hands out of the backfield. So just the ability to make the catch. I'm looking for the physicality, the toughness, as a blocker, but even more important, those two things, Corbin, just the mental awareness of when to apply those traits. You know, just that's the thing, is the defenses are so multiple now. You might have one play called, and then the running back and quarterback and everybody else on the offense has to adjust based on what they're seeing on the field, rather than, of course, the play that was called. And that's one of the things that makes it so difficult on young backs, is they're just not yet up to speed with all that part of it. So to me, that's the most important thing, is that back, whoever he is, has to be trustworthy. Is he going to make the right decision? Every athlete is going to get beat sometimes, but is he putting himself in a position where he can help the rest of his roster? If not, if he has put himself in the absolute worst position, obviously they can destroy the play on the key one right before a potential change of possession.
Sometimes, Rob, I think that you can see what I am thinking, because I never thought that you would go down that avenue. I thought I'm going to be unique doing that. I'm not going to talk about pass protection or catching passes or running between the tackles, which obviously all of those are very important traits. You'd love to have a third down back that's good at all three of those things. They all are important. But the mental aspect of the game for third down back is especially important, because you mentioned how exotic the looks are from defenses. And I'm just going to use this parallel real quick. Travis Homer, his first 2 years in the league, has really excelled in pass protection, in part because he's not afraid. He'll go up and he'll stonewall blitzing linebackers. He'll take on bigger defensive ends. He has good technique. But to me, what really makes him stand out in that regard is he understands what the defense is doing. He's very assignment sound. He picks up the blitzes. He doesn't make mistakes where he misses assignments. DJ Dallas was a very good pass protector in college, but when he got opportunities last year, his biggest issue in pass protection is he didn't know what the defense was doing, or he didn't have his assignment correct, and he left his quarterback out to dry as a result. And so I'm just using pass pro as an example there. You can see it in the passing game too. A lot of these running backs have choice routes now where they could either stay in the block, or depending what's going on defensively, they can go out and run a route. You've got to have the smarts to know what the defense is doing to you. And so I think that mental awareness, that football IQ, is even more critical for a third down back than what it is for an early down running back that maybe doesn't do as much the pass protection and receiving stuff. When we return in the third quarter, we're going to continue our Seahawks training camp preview. We're going to go to the receiver position. We already talked DK Metcalf, but I'm sure we'll talk about him a little bit more coming up here in the third quarter. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all of your UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. It's officially training camp week. We've been doing this preview series for the last couple of weeks, going to continue looking at each Seahawks position group. Going back to the offense, the receiver position, we know there's a couple big-time talents atop the depth chart here. Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, both with over 1,000 receiving yards and 10 touchdowns apiece last year. But really the big issue in the second half of the season when this offense was sputtering, Rob, we saw they didn't really have a third target that emerged in those final 8 or 9 games. They tried to address that this offseason by drafting Dwayne Eskridge in the second round, and they got a couple undrafted rookies that are intriguing as well to go along with Freddie Swain, Penny Hard, and a number of other intriguing players returning on the roster.
Yeah, I think with all of the talk when Brian Schottenheimer left and Seattle brought in Shane Waldron, I think that kind of stole some of the spotlight. And then, of course, all the Russell Wilson talk. But to me, the single biggest bit of news and transition for the Seahawks during this offseason is the fact that this club needed to find a third weapon in the passing game. And it's bringing in the tight end, Gerald Everett, which, of course, the fact that he plays tight ends, but we're not going to talk about him too much during this particular breakdown, the wide receivers. I thought that was a big step. I was encouraged by what I saw from Freddie Swain a year ago as a rookie. But yeah, the drafting of Dwayne Eskridge to me is the game changer here. It is the one that I think that absolutely moves the needle. This kid's straight line speed, his elusiveness, his power after the catch, his physicality, all of those things are what suggest to me that he can be an absolute star in Shane Waldron's offense. I'm imagining a Brandon Cooks, Percy Harvin kind of a guy who is going to be able to do those jet sweeps, is going to be able to take those really quick bubble screens and be able to make somebody miss and at least be able to carve out 8, 10, 12 yards, maybe be able to make somebody miss and take it to the house. And if the Seahawks have that, along with their two Pro Bowl record-breaking wide receivers they already have, of course, in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, then I think that this is the most talented pass-catching core that Russell Wilson's ever had. And considering that he set the franchise record for the most passing touchdowns a year ago, Corbin, and the fact that the Seahawks are going to be playing at least one more regular season game this year, then obviously I think that big numbers are expected out of that receiver core this season.
You mentioned all the stuff that makes Eskridge so great, looking at his college tape, and we've talked about it time and time again. Really what was missing, and it's been missing for a couple years in this offense, they have not had that receiver that can really create after the catch. Now, do I think DK Metcalf, with his big body, is capable of making guys miss and breaking tackles? Absolutely. But the ability of Dwayne Eskridge to catch a ball and go from 0 to 100, make somebody whiff in space, juking him out. He's got strong legs, so he can power through guys, short, kind of stocky runner. He just has that makeup they have not had on offense. And that's been an area as a whole, creating after the catch, where they have really struggled. They've been in the bottom half of the league, in the bottom 10 in two of the past 3 years, bottom half all three of those seasons. It's just been an area where they've really struggled. Part of it was the scheme. I'm expecting that's going to change by default with Shane Waldron being the coordinator. But we have to keep in mind that Eskridge is a rookie, and sometimes rookies have a really steep learning curve at the receiver position. Even a player like Eskridge, who's 24 years old, coming into the league, and he did miss time in their offseason program. So that keeps the door open for players like Freddie Swain, who had a solid rookie season, to be able to compete for that number three spot. Maybe somebody like Penny Hart, that made the team as a surprise last year, had a strong offseason program. Maybe he's ready to make the leap up there and get more snaps on offense. They've also got a couple intriguing undrafted guys. And to me, that's really the biggest question here. I think you and I agree that if Eskridge plays like he's capable of, he's your number three guy. Freddie Swain's probably number four, but you've got two or three roster spots open, and there's a lot of talented players vying for those couple of spots. We haven't even mentioned John Ursua and Cody Thompson, who are still on the team, and if they turn in strong training camps, could easily make the 53. You've got Cade Johnson as well as Connor Weddington, two intriguing undrafted rookies coming in. There are a lot of talented bodies that are going to be vying for maybe one or two roster spots when it's all said and done.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, right now with the today's edition of Dorrice Roberson, then that jumps Seattle's receiving corps to 13 bodies. And so considering that you're likely to keep five, maybe six receivers, then yeah, this is going to be a very competitive situation. I think it makes a lot of sense. Again, we're going to be bringing in a brand new offense. And so you know that you're going to be churning through wide receivers a lot. And so it makes a lot of sense to bring in Roberson, who, by the way, is a little bit like Eskridge, and he's a small, quick kind of a guy. Actually, originally was going to be at Western Michigan before he wound up at Wayne State. And then Travis Toivonen, a big body kind of a guy who physically, just in terms of his size, 6'4", 220 pounds, he's kind of like what you'd like to have as a backup to DK Metcalf, just because you don't know if Josh Gordon is going to be back. So again, there's just so many names out there, Corbin, and you mentioned some of the other good ones that I think it's going to be fascinating to see how it all shakes out. But let's be real. I think that the Seahawks fans out there, rather than fixing on who's going to be the sixth receiver on the roster, I think they're going to be interested in, can Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, can they duplicate the success that they had a year ago in this brand new offense? And the fact that they're as talented as they are, just the athletes that they are, I think is one reason to suggest that they can be able to do that. And obviously a huge part of that success also could just be the fact that they have Russell Wilson throw them the ball. But I think the bloodlines of both those two players, with Lockett and Metcalf, both of their fathers playing in the league, they have other relatives who played in the league. There's a different level of respect for the game, of appreciation for setting up your routes. I think that Tyler Lockett, especially because of his short quickness, I think that he is going to be able to acclimate to this scheme that much quicker. I think DK Metcalf could absolutely explode in this offense because he is likely to get the ball that much more often because they're not going to ask him to run as deep routes. But at the same time, to me, that's going to be one of the real big stories. Is over that first month or so of the season, do Seattle's primary two wide receivers, of course, Metcalf and Lockett, do they have that same rapport with Russell Wilson? That, to me, is going to be one of the hugest storylines of if the Seahawks are going to be able to hit the ground running when the 2021 season starts off for real.
None of us know what this offense is truly going to look like with a first-year offensive coordinator. This is the first time coordinating an offense at a level higher than high school. And so there are going to be question marks, even though everybody has raved so far about what they've seen from him and his system. Until we see him on a game field, we don't know. But based on what I have seen, the things I've heard the players talking about, I'm really excited for both of these guys for a little different reasons and what they're capable of doing in this offense. Tyler Lockett, we know, you mentioned the short area quickness and the route running savvy that he presents. It felt like at times in Brian Schottenheimer's offense, though, they kind of used him as a two or three route guy. There wasn't a lot of variance to it. You're not going to see that in Shane Waldron's offense. They're going to be running a lot of different concepts with him, especially in the short to intermediate game. I think they're going to use him more wisely in the middle of the field, where Russell Wilson's had his issues in his career attacking. They're going to try to address that. That's going to open up the potential for Lockett, who had 132 targets last year, with an extra game added on. I could see him getting 150-plus targets in this offense, and it's not out of the realm of possibility, depending on what Eskridge does as a rookie receiver in this offense, that 100-plus receptions is right in Tyler Lockett's wheelhouse again this year. As for Metcalf, what I'm most excited about, again, this is a guy that came in the league with questions about his route running. If they can develop him more, Metcalf has raved about the fact they're doing a lot of different route concepts. If he's able to take those routes and he's able to master them and just become a sharper route runner in general, he's already really difficult to defend in just go balls regularly. But if you're adding more routes and he becomes more of a threat in that short to intermediate game than he has been his first two seasons, he's unguardable. And so that's why I'm going to go into bold predictions right now, because my bold prediction revolves around number 14. I think when you add in the 17th game, you add in the fact Shane Waldron's now the coordinator of the Seahawks, I'm anticipating you're going to have a more well-rounded offense. I think both receivers are going to benefit from that, but I especially think DK Metcalf does, just because, again, there's nobody quite like this guy in terms of his size, athleticism, just the traits that he has. I think this year DK Metcalf is the first player in Seahawks history that goes for 1,600 receiving yards and 15 or more touchdowns in a season. I know those are gargantuan numbers, but this is a gargantuan human being at the receiver position. He's a special talent. I don't think it's that bold of a prediction based on what we saw from him a year ago.
You know, I think they're big numbers. You know, but when you think about it, you're basically asking him to put up 100 yards and a touchdown a game. I think that there's most cornerbacks in the NFL would feel pretty good if they limited DK Metcalf to 100 receiving yards and one touchdown. So I agree with you, Corbin. I think that DK Metcalf is an absolute superstar, as I mentioned before. I think the kid is basically Superman. I think you might see the Cam Newton kind of stuff where he's going to, you know, kind of pretend he's ripping open his jersey to expose the big Superman S on his chest.
Just make sure you cross the goal line with the football.
Exactly. So I just think he's an absolute phenomenal talent. But, you know, I kind of touched on this a moment ago, talking about the fact that that both Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, of course, have NFL bloodlines. And with Tyler Lockett in particular, his dad, Kevin Lockett, was also a wide receiver at Kansas State, interestingly enough, in a couple of seasons in the NFL. But you mentioned the savviness with Tyler Lockett. That's one of the things that's really, really impressed me throughout his six seasons in the NFL, the fact that he's only missed one game in that entire time due to any type of injury situation, any type of injuries. Just his toughness, his savviness. And because of that, I think for the third year in a row, you are going to see Tyler Lockett at least have 100 targets, at least get 1,000 receiving yards. I don't know that he's going to have quite as many touchdowns this year. I think that you're going to see the touchdowns get distributed a little bit differently. I do think that Metcalf is going to be Seattle's leading touchdown receiver this season, but don't sleep on Tyler Lockett. I still think that if there is one of Seattle's two-star receivers who struggles out of the gate a little bit, I think it could be DK Metcalf. You remember all those concerns people had about his route running? I always thought that was overblown, but he is a big man, and physics are real. Smaller, quicker people are usually able to make some, smaller, quicker routes be that much more effective in that regard. And so that's why I do think that Tyler Lockett, his numbers might actually increase in the amount of looks that he gets. Again, I just don't know that he's necessarily going to score as many touchdowns, but I feel pretty confident that he is going to be scoring all kinds of receptions and receiving yards for the Seahawks this season.
I think it's safe to say that you and I are pretty high on Metcalf and Lockett having monster seasons in 2021. Russell Wilson's got to be excited again to have those two on the outside. And, of course, adding Dwayne Eskridge to the mix as well. Make sure to check out the Locked On Today podcast hosted by Peter Bukowski. He updates you on the latest news in every major sport in under 20 minutes with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Make sure to check out Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. Coming up on our Tuesday show, we're going to continue our training camp preview. We're going to be checking out another positional battle to watch on the defensive side of the football, and we're going to be previewing linebackers on defense. You won't want to miss it. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Thanks for listening in. Go Hawks.